You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, our planet, our economy, really everything having to do with our collective existence here on planet Earth. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living and co-host of Reality Sandwich. And you can find all the information about past shows and upcoming shows at our new website, realitysandwichradio.com. And you can read all about the upcoming shows. And right now, we're beginning about a 5 or 6 week or so series on paradigm shifts. And we're going to be speaking about some significant things in the world that are changing right now with regards to our reality. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be addressing the topics of peak oil today, global energy situation, and us collectively as humans really needing to address our addiction to that and significant changes coming down the pike globally. Next week, we're going to be speaking on the subject of sustainability, planning for tomorrow. We're going to have an excellent guest on, Mike Rupert. He's the editor of FromTheWilderness.com. He is a noted peak oil expert and expert on sustainability and the future. The week after that, we'll be talking about the Constitution, knowing our rights, something very important to all of us. We'll then be talking the next week about scarcity thinking and breaking through powerful illusions. And then we're going to be talking all about socially conscious wealth strategies and the power of where we put our money and how money serves as reinforcement. But today, we're going to be speaking about peak oil and the global energy issue. And this is a topic we've addressed a couple of times in the past. Very few media outlets in the country have called this issue what it really is, which is peak oil, that notion that the world, the globe, is reaching its peak of global oil extraction with respect to how much we can pull out of the ground. It's not a permanent situation. It is a temporary supply. Yes, we've had it for a number of years, and yes, we've grown phenomenally, and we've made all kinds of incredible advancements, but this oil thing is not permanent, and the planet is soon enough going to have to face that reality. And peak oil has to do with this notion that we've reached the peak of what we're going to pull out of the ground, and at some point we'll head down the other side. And there's all kinds of implications for that, as one could imagine. We've addressed it a few times on the show today. The topic has been sneaking up slowly more and more in what we may call mainstream media or even in other outlets. I was reading recently a book called Full Moon Feast. It was all about incredible ways of eating and getting back to natural diets. And in there, she was talking about, Jessica Prentice, I believe, the author, was talking about how all cultures come to a point where they use up their key resources and face some sort of a drastic shock and change. And I'm thinking here, in my mind, I'm thinking, that's the oil situation. And sure enough, she mentioned it as well in a book published this year. So I'm thinking, wow, this is really beginning to get out there. And then about 2 weeks ago, I was absolutely delighted to catch a news report that San Francisco, our very city here, is the first city in the United States to pass a resolution acknowledging the validity of peak oil and let me just find the resolution. Resolution acknowledging the challenge of peak oil and the need for San Francisco to prepare a plan of response and preparation. Unprecedented in the U.S. that a city now is actually acknowledging this and saying, you know what, we're not going to deny the truth. We're accepting reality, and we want to do something about it as best we can. Now, people may debate what they're going to do. If is it going to be enough? Is it going to be in time? All those issues. But like we talk about all the time on the show, the first thing to do is awareness and is acknowledgement of the current state, where we're at, and what's going on. Today, we have on the show one of our co-hosts reporting in from the East Coast. Let's make sure he's on the line. Jan, are you with us?
Right here, Martin.
Okay, glad to have you. And also, in the studio, we have Dennis Broom.
Hi, Martin. How are you?
Hi, Dennis. Dennis is with the San Francisco Oil Awareness Group. Is it? Am I saying that correctly, Dennis?
Yes.
Right. And it was your group that really spearheaded getting this resolution and getting this issue in front of the city of San Francisco. Is that right?
Yes. There were four of us that are in the organization who formed a subcommittee back in November to address the issue with the supervisors to see what we might be able to do to mitigate some of the possible things that are going to come down the road with PicoL. So.
Great. Thank you for being here. And Jan is the editor of culturechange.org, a former oil industry analyst turned activist and peak oil expert. Checking in from back east, where he's preparing for the Petro Collapse Conference in Washington, I believe, beginning May 6th or 7th.
May 6th, that's right.
That's right. And also, we have a snippet of an interview that I did just this morning, a brief interview with Supervisor Ross Mercurimi, who wrote this resolution here in San Francisco. So we'll hear his comments as well. I just wanted to begin by taking us all back to earlier this year, where our that gentleman who resides in the White House was giving his annual address, and he said something quite startling because it was just so blatantly obvious to us all, but it was as if it was new news to him to acknowledge that the U.S. is addicted, I think, quote, addicted to oil. Addicted to oil. That's really quite silly. It's for him to say it so simply, like, oh, this is new news, something that we now need to address. Now, of course, anybody out there driving around past the pumps, I'm already beginning to see lineups in front of the ARCO stations because they have the cheapest prices at $3.30-something or other, knows that something is going on with regards to oil. And just moments ago this morning, I'm scrambling here to find where I printed it out, just this morning, lawmakers scrambled to ease gas price plans. So now we've got all of our buddies up in Washington freaking out that the gas prices are high and citizens might not be too happy. So in order to suppress reality and hope ameliorate the situation, Republicans are advocating sending a $100 rebate check to millions of taxpayers to sort of apologize for the high oil prices. Democrats are proposing a 60-day suspension in the federal tax on gasoline, so that people won't have to, you know, hold, spend too much on gas during their upcoming holidays, so they hopefully won't be too disappointed and vote the Republicans out. So, yes, Dennis.
Well, what I was going to say is what's unfortunate about either of those is they're not really addressing the issue, and the issue is, or the issue soon will be, it's never really clear until it's passed, that we've reached a point where we're incapable of producing petroleum at the level that the world needs it. So when there's a gap, there's going to be higher prices. And also they're addressing just transportation and particularly automobiles, but oil and petroleum are virtually in every product and all the food we eat. So it really goes a lot further than just how cheaply you can drive your car.
Sure. So. Jan, if you could be so kind to give us just a quick overview of for listeners that are just now waking up to this topic of peak oil and a little bit of the extent of our dependence on petroleum. It's not just gas.
Yes, as Dennis was just saying, there are so many aspects of our lives. All goods and services are dependent upon cheap energy and materials from petroleum. And this ongoing fossil fuel feast has allowed for growth of the economy, but the ecosystem does not grow. And so in a finite closed system, we've had the side effects going into the atmosphere, causing global warming, poisoning our rivers and oceans, such as the plastic plague. And we're, of course, growing our food with petroleum. The kinds of amelioration being talked about and offered are woefully inadequate. I mean, we should just get rid of the car dependency. That would be far better, because if you look at what a car needs from petroleum, it's not just the propulsion. We're talking about the tires. 6 gallons of oil are required to make one tire. And so we're talking about asphalt as well, and most of the pollution involved into the air from the car is not from the tailpipe. It's from the mining and the manufacturing associated with the car. So this whole oil dependence for our car-based infrastructure and all the pavement, this is something which has grown out of control, and we're about to max out, or perhaps we have already, and we'll be contracting. Now, the economy is not set up for anything other than unending growth in petroleum supply. So some of us are meeting on this issue right here in New York. I'm part of the Local Solutions to the Energy Dilemma Conference. And we have folks looking at the peak oil problem and what can be done about it, such as growing food more locally and using permaculture and so forth.
Jan, is there increasing evidence this year? I know we've been speaking about this on and off now for the last, I think, year and a half or a couple years on the show here. What's going on right now that's causing these current spike in prices? Are there more, you know, cracks, so to speak, in the globe showing up with regards to peak oil that's indicating that we're approaching a peak or at it?
Well, the news reports on gasoline price increases and oil supply tightness never mention peak. It never really looks at the possibility that there's a permanent supply problem which will only get worse. This is just too heavy a concept and is perceived as negative news for industry and the whole financial system, and people's expectation is they're addicted to petroleum. When we look at the refining capacity around the world, it is utilized to the maximum extent. There is no extra give in the system. And oil wells have been maxed out. We're going to see only tighter and tighter supply, but meanwhile demand has pushed things to the breaking point. So if there's another disruption and the country has not even recovered from the Katrina disaster, and if there's a geopolitical crisis such as Iran cutting off oil, any of these things can throw things into a serious tailspin, and we would see prices go through the roof. And supply will virtually dry up, even though there will still be oil in the ground. So it's the oil market that's really in charge of things, even more so than the geological reality of how much oil there is.
How tight is that market right now, Jan, as far as the percentage of flex in the system?
It seems to be very, very small. I mean, when you have oil over $70 a barrel, this is something that was previously thought unthinkable for, continued economic growth or for the health of the financial system. So the reactions to it indicate how desperate people are. There are going to be wars and conflicts, but certainly there's a lot of diplomatic strife right now, and that can only increase. We don't have much lacks in. We don't have a much. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess you could say that that there is very little
spare production.
What's that, Dennis?
Spare production.
Yeah, it's also further downstream in the system. We're not able to squeeze more out through the refining and distribution system. So the whole idea is to keep going at all costs and allow alternatives to step in. But the alternatives, in terms of other forms of energy, are not ready on the necessary scale. So this, in turn, adds to the stress and pressure on the market. And one can only look forward a little bit into the future and imagine what it's going to be like for people who are currently strung out on petroleum and who won't be able to use anything else to get to work or obtain food or to operate in a normal fashion.
You say strung out on petroleum. Clearly the globe is strung out on it, and it's not necessarily our fault. We've just evolved this way, and here we find ourselves now today in a situation where there's tremendous unrest with Iran. They don't like us, for good reason. We can have a whole different show on that subject. But what does the U.S. get any oil from Iran? And secondly, if they were just to, you know, close the door, so to speak, and say, you know what, we're not selling any to anybody, which is their prerogative, I suppose, what would happen and how quickly?
Well, it's a matter of the psychological effect on the market. Iran doesn't supply very much to the U.S., and they're quite interested in maximizing their business with China and the Soviet Union. They are in a position potentially to offer more to the West. They'd have to regear their petroleum infrastructure and refine more products that the importing countries would want. But again, it's more of a psychological effect. If the market perceives tightness, the price of oil is whatever people will pay for it. And so when a system is going full tilt and does not have a spare refining capacity, and when the maximum is coming out of the ground, and we don't have large sources about to come online and put the current tight supply situation behind us, then anything can happen, and it's going to take one more straw on the camel's back that can throw the whole economic system into a tizzy.
And in the meantime, we've got ExxonMobil, Chevron, and Conoco reporting this week absolutely record profits through the roof from capitalizing on these high prices. What's going on in the national scene right now? I know that we do have a senator who's up there pushing it, Roscoe Bartlett. And
Congressman
Bartlett. And this incredible report from Robert Hirsch, who's Senior Energy Program Advisor at a military technology consulting firm, right? He had an incredible report. So we are getting some national attention on this issue. And Jan, you just wrote in the most recent on Culture Change recently about the national energy conversation. So if you could just give us a quick update on, is this issue getting some attention? I mean, it seems to me to be quite paramount. And what's going on?
Yes, inside the Beltway. There is a Pentagon-sponsored series of energy conversations. And on Monday, they had Congressman Bartlett and Robert Hirsch talk about peak oil. They gave very hard-hitting presentations with a lot of facts and findings. They are both scientists, and quite capable of evaluating not just the oil situation is, but the alternatives. And I was interested to see that they didn't hold back in telling it like it is, and implicitly criticizing federal policy on energy. So while there's some enlightened conversation going on, and the subject of peak oil is becoming better known, during this same period we have a very superficial coverage by the mainstream media on gasoline prices and on the oil supply situation. And what do we see out of the Bush administration? We see this politically motivated effort or whitewashing to try to lower gasoline prices or stop them from rising further. The idea of ceasing delivery to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to have more fuel, therefore getting to the market, and the other disturbing initiative to alleviate environmental protections to allow for more gasoline to get to market. These are the craziest and stupidest kinds of approaches that do not solve the situation long-term whatsoever. So we have this short-sighted thinking which dominates in government and the news media and, unfortunately, for people's pocketbooks.
And businesses, too, corporations as well. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, they're making gangbuster profits, but that's kind of the history of the U.S. when there is a crisis, that there's going to be a few companies really, really milking it and pocketing some big bucks. So there is some attention, a little bit more, you know, on the national level, and let's bring it right back down here for a few moments to San Francisco, where finally one city in this nation has passed a resolution acknowledging the challenge of peak oil and the need to prepare and plan some sort of response, at least do something, acknowledge it, put it on record. So I'm reading here from the San Francisco resolution, where they state here that the United States has only 2% of the world's oil reserves. They state here that national oil companies own 72% of remaining oil reserves and 55% of remaining gas reserves. When we speak of the subject of peak oil, we should clarify that we're talking not just petroleum, but also natural gas, which I believe is even a greater concern, yes?
Well, any natural resource that isn't renewable is going to run out eventually if you continue to use it. So it would be minerals and so forth as well if you actually look at it, if you look at it carefully. So.
Right, absolutely. They also note here that the San Francisco is entirely dependent on external supplies of petroleum, including the crude oil processed in the Bay Area refineries as well. And they also mention here that the Department of Energy-sponsored study on the mitigation of peak oil demonstrated that a 20-year lead time is required for effective mitigation. So they've done some good work here in the with regards to putting this resolution together and acknowledging that, hey, the city's got to look at this thing and address it, and it's going to be a tremendous impact upon the city and upon its citizens. And I'm sitting here today with Dennis Broom, who is a local activist and outstanding citizen, who said, you know what, we have got to do something about this, and he did. So, Dennis,
well,
please.
I was one of four people who did. It was okay. Certainly not a lone thing. We originally contacted Cal Broomhead, who's in the Department of Energy, in the Department of Environment, rather, and we knew him from some of the meetings that we had him speak at one of our peak oil meetings. We went to some commission on the environment meetings, and we're told that we should come back with something concrete that we could do rather than just presenting a letter saying we're concerned about peak oil. So we actually drafted this resolution and a request for a study that went along with it that we then began to take around to the various supervisors' offices and talk to their aides or the supervisors themselves. And, a couple weeks ago, as you said, we were rewarded, and it was very, 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 very good for us to have gotten this far. We were awarded with a vote that was 10-0 for the resolution.
So where did you first run into this topic, and how did it get, you know, fuel its fire for you?
I'm a very unlikely person to be in it. I'm on a number of mailing lists, and on one of them, one day, a person said, "This movie sounds like it might be fun." It was The End of Suburbia, which is a movie that many, many people in peak oil aware of, almost all of us have seen. It was at New College, and this was about July of 2004. Yeah, I guess it was the end of July in 2004. So a friend of mine and I went, and I had no idea what to expect, but the movie just sort of changed my life in reality. I mean, by the end of it, I was pretty upset. There were things in it that I sort of assumed would happen. I mean, I knew that things were finite and we use and use, but I had no idea of the timeline that people were talking about in the movie for peak oil happening and what manifestations might happen from it. And I'd never really considered oil as something that's used to grow food, with so many calories of oil per calorie of food we eat and so forth. So it was a real eye-opener.
Well, could you be so kind as to share just some of the quick components of that film that stood out for you? I mean, End of Suburbia, which listeners can imply from the name, meaning that the end of life out there in the middle of nowhere where you're able to drive with your car.
And it's kind of a misnomer because it's sort of like the end of our culture as we know it, regardless of where we are. Even if it comes to suburbia a little bit sooner, it's not saying that anywhere is really a good place to be in this situation. So people sort of go and think maybe going to the cities is what we should do, or should we live in the country? But petroleum addiction, as we're calling it, or the use of it is so ubiquitous that there's no place that wouldn't be affected by, you know, a short supply in energy. It's just the way our culture works. Specific parts of the movie, I mean, the food issues were when I really started getting depressed when I was watching it. I was surprised by some of the other statistics. I knew oil and war sort of were related and always are going together. And there's a new movie out that I just saw recently this week at one of our meetings called Oil Crash, and it connects war and oil a little bit more concretely than it did in End of Suburbia. But that will be around and probably out in the near future for consumption of people to see if they'd like. I guess that's the major things that I noticed.
Sure. Janet, are you still with us?
Yes.
I'm sure you've seen End of Suburbia. What couple of points from that film would be some really stark components to throw out there to our listeners now? Maybe you could talk a little bit about the, what is it, the Thousand Mile Salad or something?
Well, I believe the movie was inspired by James Howard Kunstler's writings, who's been critiquing suburbia and degrading and degraded American landscape. And this film put several excellent talking heads in succession talking about how we are so dependent on oil and cheap energy for this lifestyle of spending and growth and consumeristic isolation. And how, because oil is peaking and we will not have the energy to continue this lifestyle, that things are going to change. Some of the warnings were actually rather muted. The idea that we're going to have to live more efficiently and perhaps grow food locally, these were strong points. But I think, as Dennis was alluding earlier, it's not like the cities and the countryside are going to be perfectly safe and secure. We're going to feel the change across the board. So it's a little misleading to talk about the end of suburbia when cities are threatened just as much. Because when you think of it, at least you can grow some food out there in suburbia. There are lawns. You can change into gardens and depave the driveways and grow food there, and we're going to see some very heavy changes that End of Suburbia did not dare get at. For example, if you have die-off of the population because you can't float the same number of people virtually eating petroleum, that's a very disturbing development. And some of the solutions offered in End of Suburbia, I think, were woefully inadequate, such as new urbanism, and to think that we can still have a lot of cars and we'll just be a little more dense and have more mixed-use neighborhoods, that is really barely hinting at the kinds of changes that are in store for us. So I talk about culture change, and I believe it's going to come through ultimately because of petrol collapse. So although it's a great movie, I think it's a very good starting point for a lot of people to learn about this, and I think over 20,000 copies have been sold primarily over the Internet.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich, and today we're addressing the massively important subject of peak oil on the show. Last, about 2 weeks ago, San Francisco passed the first city in the United States passed a resolution to acknowledge the validity of peak oil and to do their best to prepare in some way. This morning, I had the opportunity to chat briefly with City Supervisor Ross Mercurimi, who wrote, who wrote this piece actually. You guys actually wrote it.
Yeah. And he sponsored it. He was the first sponsor. Chris Daly, Jake McGoldrick, who was also very supportive, and mm-hmm. Sophie Maxwell were people who jointly sponsored the resolution. And they were the actual four supervisors we met with. The other five offices we went to, we met with AIDS. So it was very.
So this morning I had a chance to chat with him and get some of his comments regarding the resolution and peak oil. So let's listen.
Ross, I appreciate you getting back to me to just share with me a couple of quick sentiments regarding the peak oil resolution passed here in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
It's a pretty huge issue. I just want to ask you real quick, what should people know about this? If San Francisco citizens are just now catching an ear about this notion of peak oil, in your opinion, why is this so important and why is the city taking some action here?
Well, there's a number of reasons why it's important. Frankly, I think this illegal and misguided war abroad in Iraq is not really just about democracy. It's about oil, and it's about our sort of hegemonic interest over in that part of the world due to our oil demand and need here in the United States. We have a very consumptive society. It's very over-reliant on oil, and you can see the gas prices is an indicator of that. I don't think anybody would argue that there is not an infinite supply of oil. So while there is great distress and taxing on the supply of oil, we're going to continue to see the price of oil per barrel just going through the roof. And I believe that municipalities throughout the United States have a responsibility to start to prepare themselves for either the inevitability of when oil supplies become so limited and so bleak that we need alternative energy sources and lifestyles in anticipation of that, and or when oil supplies become so limited and we are digging deeper and further down for more crude, dirtier oil, we better prepare ourselves for the environmental, social environmental consequences of that probability as well.
Why San Francisco, and why is no other country, no other city in this country acknowledging the validity of this circumstance and really calling it out for what it is, this notion of peak oil that we are reaching at some point, either now or soon, global peak in oil extraction and heading down the other side? How come nobody's really talking about this on a grand scale?
Well, it's not like the United States has always been a leader in the environmental movement. In many ways, the United States compared to other countries, especially Europe, Western Europe, as we've seen during the 1970s and 80s, sort of following those other nations. But I believe there are good cities in the United States that are more hip and sensitive to these issues. And without fail, I think San Francisco can be another sort of bellwether that introduces to the rest of the country concepts that might seem foreign or unpopular to the rest of the country, but eventually the rest of the country will catch up. Whether they choose to or not, you're going to find that due to the conditions that we cannot control unless we enact extreme conservatism with regard to how oil is used, we just all have to expect that our lifestyles and our municipalities are going to have to relearn how to get along without depending on fossil fuel technology in order to supply, you know, our day-to-day lives. And I believe San Francisco is asking the right questions. I believe, you know, that we need to prepare an infrastructure that is less reliant on fossil fuel, that is more reliable on renewable energy. We're long overdue in catching up to cities like even Sacramento, who is a leader not in this nation, but actually in a good part of the world in solar technology, in meeting the commercial and residential needs. San Francisco can catch up. Even a foggy city like ours, there's enough sun pockets where we can definitely take advantage of that and use that as a way to compensate for the lack of fossil fuel energy. Same with wind and same with tidal energy.
Mm-hmm. SustainLane.com, in the article that was published about the resolution, which I didn't catch, by the way, in the Chronicle I'm not really sure why, but they mentioned that San Francisco is voted, in their opinion, the third best city to withstand an oil crisis. How do you feel the city's doing right now with regard to, I mean, if this crisis comes sooner than expected? How's San Francisco doing?
Well, I don't think San Francisco would do well at all if the crisis hit us today, but I think what plans are in the pipeline and the discussion that we're having about peak oil and about our interest in converting from our reliance on PG&E-administered electricity and gas to community choice aggregation, or another version of public power, is definitely a step in the right direction. But to get to that particular place, we have to leap with the considerable investment of rebuilding an infrastructure that is designed to accept the notion that peak oil is not just in theory, but literally a reality. And I think San Francisco is on the right track, but I believe we're years away from having our rhetoric meet our, I think, practice. But I believe that we will be a leader in the United States in this endeavor.
What should the average citizen do at this point to either learn more or, you know, in some way begin to, you know, educate themselves about what's coming?
Well, I'm actually having a hearing. It'll be one of the first hearings, I think, in this country on the concept of peak oil and how municipalities should understand it and prepare for it. It's on May 19th here in City Hall at the LASO committee, which I chair, on peak oil, May 19th. And then we may have a follow-up hearing with Richard Heidenberg, who is a scholar on this concept. We may continue to have a series of these kind of hearings, but the first one at least will be on May 19th.
Mm-hmm. And just lastly, do you really feel that San Francisco can move itself forward and start spending some money to do the right studies and prepare, or are we going to get mired down in the standard debate about, you know, is this real, is it not real, and let's spend years and years talking about whether it's really serious or not?
Well, I think that debate will always happen, but we just have to be more creative and inventive in dealing with the debate while advancing the ball forward with smart legislation, which is my intention, through community choice aggregation and through the bully pulpit of introducing to the public who's unfamiliar with this crisis or connecting the dots to this crisis with regard to depleting oil supplies, wars abroad, gasoline prices going up. These things are not sort of disconnected. They're all very interrelated. And that's why that we want to have a hearing and push legislation. You'll start to see that in the next few months.
Right. Absolutely. Hey, I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy.
Sure.
And
gotta go.
I look forward to connecting with you again.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care, Ross.
That was Supervisor Ross Mercurimi this morning about the peak oil resolution that San Francisco passed about 2 weeks ago. Dennis, your thoughts on Ross's comments there?
I thought they were good. We are planning on working with him in the process of having hearings and so forth, and probably an eventual study that would be undertaken to see what how San Francisco actually would react to varying degrees of oil prices that are rising, or what would happen if there were disruptions in the service. More so than just transportation, again, though, I think we will be emphasizing that we're concerned about the distribution of food, and if food supplies were disrupted, what would the city be able to do to maybe mitigate something? We went into all the supervisors saying this is a problem that doesn't have a solution. It can only be mitigated, and that's not a popular way of dealing with politicians. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not happy to hear that, so we're trying to get people to think outside the box and have a paradigm shift, in fact, and that is also part of what city government has to do. Many of us don't believe that we are going to continue to exist in a culture that can have eternal growth, because the eternal growth model just comes up with these same situations where resource depletion will happen again and so forth. So we would be back in the same unfortunate circumstances, even if somewhere along the line we began again doing the same thing. So we are trying to look outside of the box, and we're hoping to raise consciousness a lot in the population so they understand the concept of peak oil, the fact that this is going to happen, it is happening, and that's probably the best way we could hope for the supervisors to get support would be from the population as well, the citizens of the city. So.
Thank you so much for saying that so eloquently. That's really our objective here with Reality Sandwich, is to help raise consciousness and bring this issue to people's awareness, because this is not something that we can just simply, you know, mitigate and just hope to do our best. We're going to have to face it. We're going to have to address it. And we being all of us collectively, there's no longer in this world, you know, them and us. We're learning more and more every day how interconnected we all are. We've never not been. We're just rediscovering that. And on the issue of paradigm shift and culture change, Jan, What's your take on the need for culture change and paradigm shift with regards to this entire subject matter and what's coming down the pike tomorrow?
Well, I think that change is in the wind. We are surrounded by attempts to deal with the problem posed by petroleum dependence and endless growth. Some very positive models of sustainability are popping up here and there and have been practiced a long time, but don't get much attention. There's not much money to be made off of consuming less. I think with efforts such as the San Francisco resolution and studying the problem further, this momentum has to be kept up to turn this into action. What we saw last year with Mayor Newsom torpedoing the fee on plastic bags because of the petroleum and plastic industries' influence, this is something which definitely is an example of holding back progress. We need to think about some very deep changes. When you look at city streets, they're devoted to the car. They're excessively wide. Every street can be changed so that it allows only half the current number of lanes. So they can any two-way streets can be turned into one-ways, and then there's extra room for more bike paths or bike lanes. Or a lane taken up for buses only, light rail, and pedestrians. These kinds of changes are going to be necessary if we're going to start saving fuel and reclaiming our common spaces. And besides the threat to the climate through greenhouse gas emissions, and cars are a major component of that, that needs to be adopted. We've seen some very good analysis of the problem and acknowledging the problem and studying the problem, but it's what's held up to be the solution, which is the real stumbling block and which is holding us back.
Well, we're certainly up for a significant paradigm shift if our city supervisor is calling for extreme conservatism here in San Francisco.
Well, I liked many of the things that Ross Marcomini said. I could not hear the last couple of minutes. The volume didn't come through on this telephone all the way to New York. I did like some of the things I heard. I'm just throwing the idea out there that the effort to really make changes has to be, very hard-hitting, and we need sweeping changes that will be fundamental as to our way of living. And I think the supervisor did allude to that when he talked about our way of life.
Now, for either of you, Dennis or Jan, he mentioned several different options there around energy, renewable energy possibilities, wind and tidal energy. He said that we do have some sun pockets here in San Francisco to possibly take in some of the solar energy. When you look at San Francisco, we're a fairly isolated city here. If there were to be some sort of major oil disruption, and let's just imagine here, let's put on our imagination caps and say, okay, suddenly the city has got to fend for itself and sort its way out. Can this city make some adjustments? And we're going to learn something next week. I just want to throw out there, we'll be speaking all about sustainability and learning some more things about how cities can learn to make themselves self-dependent. But in your opinions, do those things exist for us as possibilities?
Well, I think some good things could be done with wind power and solar panels. There's this question of scalability, that they are a minute amount of our energy resources at the moment. And in order for them to become a new infrastructure that's doing what petroleum does, it would take a long time. And it appears that the peak on petroleum is right here or has passed or is very, very soon. So I'm not sure there's enough time to really develop those to the point where business as usual is going to go on. I mean, this is once again what I believe business as usual will not go on. And that's something I'll just keep stressing. So while those are possible options and maybe we can get some good out of them and they can help people, and that would be wonderful, but I'm not putting all my eggs in the basket of, like, this will save us and let us live the way we do right now.
Mm-hmm. We're beginning to see seeds of change. Stories on in the media recently about the increase in telecommuting, for example, right? People are beginning to sort of plan for not needing to travel so much, yet it's,
rising gas prices does seem to create some hysteria. I mean, when I turn on the news in the morning, I'm getting scared by the newscasters who are screaming that they're paying so much. So I just can't imagine what it would be, say, if it's $5 or $6 a gallon, which I think is very likely.
Yet I just heard a little while ago from Terry here in the studio that, 30, 40 years ago in Germany, gas was, $2 or something a gallon, you know? It's like around the world, they've been paying higher prices, and we've been getting it cheap for so long.
Their infrastructure is set up a little differently around that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But they always have paid closer to some of the cost of it.
Well, if I may chime in answer to your question, Martin, we need to question what the energy is for. So when we look for alternatives to petroleum, and we don't find them in abundance, I think it's time to say, well, do we really need to have multiple televisions in every home? Does everyone need his or her own computer? Do we all need cars? So when does the sharing begin? When do we start to use electric appliances as community resources? And when do ovens start to bake 6 loaves of bread at a time instead of just 1? So when it comes to alternatives, those are going to be the alternative energies. These are going to be used in a very decentralized, small fashion here and there. And there are extra resource capabilities here and there for different kinds of alternative energies, depending on the ecosystem. But we're not going to be able to keep business going as usual, as Dennis pointed out. So it is going to be a very deep cultural shift, and it's going to be for a smaller population of humans that the ecosystem can really support. We've been growing and growing based on cheap petroleum and fossil fuels. And we look around and wonder how we're going to get by without all that cheap energy and those materials. And we're going to have to deal with a very limited ecosystem, and one that has been trashed and paved over and poisoned. So we have some very serious adjusting to do. San Francisco is not going to be viable much longer as a bustling, crowded city using vast quantities of energy and materials mostly going to the landfill.
Mm.
And the same goes for other cities. Where is the food coming from for San Francisco? Pretty far away.
Yeah, I think the average piece of food in this country travels 2,000 or 3,000 miles. But if you think about your clothing, the cotton's grown in Georgia, sent to China, and brought back, so it's gone 20,000. I mean, you know, the way we use cheap energy just to move stuff around so that we can create this life that we have is going to come to an end. And also, the point you made about wind and solar, you were talking about things that generate electricity, which, once again, is not an answer to a gasoline.
Right.
Okay.
It's just one thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, but the options they talk about for them often are ethanol, hydrogen. There are problems with all of the alternative fuels, even biodiesel, which is really nice as long as you have a lot of McDonald's with extra oil around. But at some point, that sort of interim solution is not a scalable one for the entire culture with our 300 million cars. I don't know, probably 500 million.
Yes, listeners can listen to some of the past shows with Jan on this subject where we've gotten a bit deeper into the extent to which we are dependent on petroleum, that it is not just gas for our cars and trucks and, just how many products are really connected. And for me, I think the greatest shocker when I was learning about this subject years ago was the connection between petroleum and our ability to grow food in mass quantities. And when we begin to look at those correlations, we can gain an increased understanding of where we stand collectively at the precipice of this significant shift in our collective way of being. And thus, that statement alone is scary and a little bit freaky and makes people want to shut off the radio and just, you know, keep their head in the sand and hope that it's all going to be okay. But when we look around in the world, there's so many things that we're already doing that about. And here's an area that is already beginning to knock us over the head. Soon enough, it's going to knock us right over. And with anything that's going to knock us right over, wouldn't we rather be at least, you know, have our eyes open and be paying attention?
And with the principle of judo going with the energy flow, we should take the economic system down. The global economy is destroying the planet. It's very wasteful and inequitable. So if it threatens us to rely on distant food systems and manufacturing and trade, we better start getting local right now. And we can start to undo this mess by reducing petroleum drastically. There are many things that people can do to start doing this and to undermine the corporate global economy by buying strictly local and starting to do more bartering and doing without a lot of material things and cheap energy. There's a lot of joy in that, and people are going to be getting closer together and helping out each other and solving these problems on the very local level. We're not living as a communal society in any way right now, and the so-called solutions to the peak oil dilemma or the problem of high gasoline prices, it really is not about energy and trying to change farmland into energy sources. These are non-solutions. So it's going to be a very deep cultural shift, but it's going to take a petro-collapse to bring that about.
Well, unfortunately, sometimes it does take significant external circumstances to get us to change inside. And large-scale change does begin with one person at a time and with, of course, significant influence from the top. But if our leaders aren't going to do it, it's going to start with us. One person at a time beginning to wake up, shift their approach, shift their understanding, connecting with others, talking, addressing reality. Large-scale change begins with small-scale change, one person at a time beginning to embrace and move forward. Jan, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and welcome you again in the future to keep us updated on the subject of peak oil. This show will be archived at realitysandwichradio.com. And Jan, where can folks read more about what you're doing and connect in with you?
Well, I want to say that in addition to the individual taking these steps, there is a movement out there. There are more conferences and publications and films and music on peak oil and petro collapse and culture change. I would say if people look at petrocollapse.org, they can find out about the May 6th DC petro collapse conference. There's culturechange.org as well, and we're linking to many other excellent sources of information, trying to get us to, if not an ecotopia, then a tomorrow that is going to be a lot lower energy intensive.
Jan, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you, Martin. I enjoyed your comments very much, and those of my friend Dennis as well. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, Jan.
Thanks, Jan.
Dennis, where can folks connect in with what you're doing here locally?
Well, we're one of several groups in San Francisco and a number around the Bay Area. We have a website now where we've connected six of our groups together, and it's www.sfbayoil.org. There's a lot of information on San Francisco post-carbon, on San Francisco oil awareness, East Bay peak oil, San Mateo, out in Diablo Valley, which is Walnut Creek and so forth, and then we recently added Santa Clara. So We have a Peak Oil Picnic coming up May 7th in Golden Gate Park. If anyone's interested, they can find out information about that there by going to the San Francisco Oil Awareness part of the site. And also an art show we're planning on doing at Art SF June 17th. And local artists with any kind of climate change or peak oil art are encouraged to donate, or not donate it, but to participate in the show. And information about that is there.
Dennis, thank you for being on. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm with Healthful Living, and you're listening to Reality Sandwich here on KPOO. We're on every Thursday at noon addressing topics about our shared reality, a palatable taste of the truth. Next week, we'll be talking all about planning for tomorrow, issues in sustainability, what you absolutely must know. Connect in there. You can read about it at realitysandwichradio.com. This has been Reality Sandwich at 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. We'll be back next week. Coming up next, Connecting the Dots.